Welcome to Disciplined Investor Podcast Time. It's Andrew Horowitz, your host, and it's episode number 69, and it is coming to you live today from the Money Show out here in San Francisco. So if you have a little question about why I sound a little weird today, well, it's because I'm actually broadcasting this from the show and or recording this from the show. And what I decided to do is I've been involved in a couple of classes that I've been teaching. I taught one on portfolio mastery that was early in the morning. And I did one on the Strategy Lab panel with a few of my friends who are also on the Strategy Lab for MSN Money. And I'll bring that to you. I had a recording of that, and I'll bring you some of the highlights of that and some of the overview of the next 6 months, what each of the Strategy Lab participants thought was going to be happening over the next few months. And also from John Markman, he had a presentation, and he talked about spin-outs and spin-offs and when's the best time to really invest, and is it a good time to invest? And finally interviewed Vad Yazvinsky, who was the winner from last year's Strategy Lab. He was the amateur who has turned professional, and he's in this year's Strategy Lab as well, or this period Strategy Lab. And he was up, I think, in the Strategy Lab Open, which was the qualifying round a couple of, I guess, about a year ago. He was up close to 30% when the market was just pretty soft. And in the last 6 months, he was up over, I think, 11%, and the market was down substantially. Right now, he is somewhere after the first week, about, I think, in fourth place, maybe. He had some shorts that went against him in the recent, you know, move that the market made on last week, during, especially on Friday. That was pretty – was that wild or what? That was unbelievable. But we'll talk about that in a minute. And then also, yours truly in second place in the Strategy Lab, only 30% allocated, but up about 1.5% already after the first week. Big gains in Adobe and in DUG, and even though my – short position position I have in the SDS, or the 200% inverse of the S&P 500, isn't doing well. Of course, that's just for a hedge, and if you've been listening for a while, I think hedging is really a good idea. So we're going to it's going to be a little choppy today, but when we get into the discussion, I think you're going to enjoy some of the things that you'll hear, and I hope you do. It's, again, coming from the Money Show in San Francisco. If you haven't been to one of these before, I would encourage you to do so. Great speakers, great classes. Anyway, we're going to get into it in a moment. We'll be right back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 69, starts right now.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Well, welcome back again. It's episode number 69 is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And I got to tell you, I'm in San Francisco and I love it here. I absolutely love it. It is beautiful. It's a little chilly for my taste, but I got to be honest, it is beautiful, this town. The weather's great. We went to Chinatown last night and had a great time there. And the opportunity to really, I mean, the cultural opportunities here are just amazing. But for those of you that live here, I am very jealous. And for those of you who don't, I would suggest you get yourself over here and visit, because it's a great place to visit. But anyway, the Money Show is going on, and it's 4 days or 3 days of action-packed discussion about finance. And I don't think it could have come at a better time when we saw the market doing this hoop-de-doo review last week, up and down movement all over the place. And I think that was really good, because it gave people a different perspective to look at what's really going on. And as a matter of fact, there was a great discussion last week about how during the last several bear markets, we saw 300, 200-point moves on the upside several times. But never during a bull market did we ever see a 300-point day. Now, mind you, the volatility and variability of the markets right now has been much greater than we've seen before. So you got to take that into consideration, I think, and put that in the perspective of, it may be, you know, times are different. Maybe when we talk about that, you think about, okay, the fact is that the numbers are a lot greater right now, the market's a lot higher, so what does it look like? But I will tell you, if you look at the statistics, it will show you that during bear markets, the only time you see those dramatic moves up, essentially it's the rush in of people who are thinking that the bottom has been reached and the movement, you know, they want to get in fast. But with that in mind, I will tell you that oil, hello, did you see that? Did you see what happened to oil? I mean, that incredible move on Friday, down $5. But here's what I want you to think about. Two things that was really spooky. What happened on Friday was, besides, you know, we saw a variety, but what happened on Friday really interesting was the invasion, or at least the start of the invasion of Georgia by Russia. And under most circumstances, you would consider gold moving higher under that, because obviously in any political instability, any wartime environment, you will find that you will see the flight to safety. You will see people starting to move into things like precious metals and into oils and commodities. But the exact opposite happened. And that's very interesting, but more concerning. Why would that be the case? I mean, if Russia is such an incredible oil partner, in other words, they do produce a tremendous amount of oil there, and there's pipelines that flow through that whole entire region, why would we see oil prices moving down, not only down, but so dramatically down in a time when actually, in all fairness, they should have been moving at least up or stabilizing? And the same thing with gold. Well, obviously, one of the big reasons was, or at least one of the causes was, the fact that the dollar finally started its rise. There's been a lot of talk about the dollar moving up, and it's been happening. As I mentioned many, many times, we have been long the dollar in our portfolios in general. For our core, more conservative portfolios, long the dollar for the last 3 months. And if you look at the chart on the dollar, particularly some of the ETFs that trade the dollar, they're doing well. But when you look at the dollar and realize there is a direct correlation from the dollar to oil, you say, wait a minute, well, there's a big reason. The fact is that if we're going to have a strengthening in the dollar, and more so, it's not so much the strengthening of the dollar, but the realization that the Eurozone is really hurting, the realization that the world economies are coming down. This is not necessarily good news, okay? I understand the markets were up. I understand that oil was down. I understand that gold was down. But that doesn't paint a pretty picture for the global economy. What it actually does is quite the opposite. And mind you, you know me for a long time here. I am not a terminal bear. I am not always talking, well, lately I am, okay? Obviously, lately I am. But the fact is that this is not really boding well for the global economy if you really break it down. So I don't want you to get carried away. If you want to start maybe bouncing in a few specific areas, I think I mentioned last we are moving into Adobe, and we did buy that for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy at 42 last week. And I think it ended the week at about 45, so we made a quick chunk of change there. But we also, in all fairness, did a move out of ITT. We were stopped out utilizing our risk management techniques. But we did short on Friday early morning CEDC, which is the Central European distributor of, it essentially is a company that distributes vodka and alcohol and spirits, based in Poland. I want you to do me a favor. Take a look at a chart. As a matter of fact, you know what? I'll put one up on the website, on our thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Take a look at the chart that I'm going to show you. It is really interesting if you look at incredible resilience over time to all the bad things that happened in the markets for a lot of different reasons. Good earnings, the company itself had good prospects of long-term success, and the fact is the staple such as vodka was obviously, and other alcohol, was really going to do well over time. But what happened was the ingredients cost started creeping up as we saw commodity costs and food costs going up. And of course, vodka is made out of a commodity, a food source, if you will. And more importantly, if you look at the chart recently, it started to do what I call a rollover. Look at the far right of the chart. You'll see it's starting to roll over. And it's starting to move down. There was a clear signal that was given, besides the fact it was on our list, that was coming up consistently over the last 3 weeks of what we call of a breakdown short, where analysts are starting to come in and downgrade, and we're seeing the earnings come in from an analyst standpoint lower. We're seeing it starting to break down a couple of technicals, charting specifics, and it did. Look at that. We shorted close to the beginning of the morning, probably about 10 o'clock in the morning, and we shorted when it was down about $2.50 or so in the morning, and it ended down almost $7 for the day. So I want you to look at that charting pattern for both Adobe, and I want you to look at a charting pattern for CEDC, and look at that. Those are two stocks that made it through the Quanta Funda Techna process, and actually, not the short, but the other stocks that we talked about are also on the Strategy Lab. But what I thought we would do is we would start off this discussion today, and we start off the talk here from San Francisco with the opening comments and discussion from the Strategy Lab, and then we'll pick it up from there with a discussion from John Markman, and then go into my interview that I had with Yad Yazvinsky. But and then we'll finish up with this. I'll tell you this, that also a lot of this is going to be on themoneyshow.com and nsn.com. There's a bunch of videos that I'll be in, and woo, all sorts of really cool things So I'll give you some more things coming up in the future. But take a look at thedisciplinedinvestor.com and take a look at the show notes for this show, and I'll show you those two charts, and I'll put them up right now so you can see them. And I think that you'll find them kind of interesting and very revealing in really what's happened. And I think that it's a real eye-opener in terms of how the charts look.
For the last 10 years or so, I'm going to give you my little spiel, and then we'll get to the stocks. We've been running, every 6 months, we line up six top investors, the kind of people you come to money shows to hear. Some of these guys you know, some you don't, but probably should. We set them up with a model portfolio online, and we challenge them to trade stocks, beat the market, show you how they do it. We make them write about, document every move they make. So it's set up like a contest. It's really a learning experience. Just to give you an idea, we've done 17 six-month rounds over 10 years. The average player, if you took all the players over the years, average out how much they've made, it's more than twice what the market's gained over that time. So there's some good knowledge there. The cumulative gain, it's more than twice the return of the S&P 500. We've had people, we start with a $100,000 portfolio. We've had some people run it up to $200,000 over 6 months. It's pretty good in any market. I think that was during the tech boom. We've had finishes as low as $30,000. We haven't found any strategies that I think work in every market, but usually something's working, whatever the market's doing, even when it's doing what it's doing to us this week. And being very confusing. More importantly, you can explore dozens of strategies, see how they work in the real world, and maybe find something that fits how you want to invest. What I'm going to do today is introduce everybody. We'll talk a little bit about their strategies. And we've just started in this week the latest round of our contest, so they've just been picking their stocks for the next 6 months, and that's the bulk of what we're going to talk about today. It's been an interesting start. I mean, the market was way up a couple of days, way down yesterday. I guess we're way up today, so if you guys are clear on where the market's going, maybe you can explain it to me. I'm going to start with... hi, John. I didn't see you walk in. I'm going to start with our winner from last round, the guy who made the most money, Vad Yazvinsky. Vad actually joined Strategy Lab as an amateur. We ran a competition... the last 6 months of last year, let readers play along with the pros. Vad won that, topped a lot of our players that round. Return was, what was your 30, open return? 34%. If you remember what the market was like the last 6 months of last year, that's pretty, it's pretty amazing. First 6 months of this year, he was ahead of the market by about 17%. Real return of about 10% while the market was down 6.5%, close to 7%. He runs a portfolio that I think you describe it as safe in some of your literature. very aggressive, lots of picks, a real mix of longs and shorts. If you can do that well, it was right for this market. And Vad, I'm just wondering, you're doing something similar this time. How is your strategy going to beat the market, this market?
It's a tough one. And the biggest challenge I'm having right now with the portfolio is actually finding good stocks to short. I mean, their behavior of some of the shorts is just completely... On some level, I guess you can call it irrational. It seems to be driven more by just the amount of short covering that's going on rather than any fundamental basis behind, you know, stocks rebounding by 20-30% on the day. So that would be a little bit of a challenge, and I might even introduce some just ultra-short ETFs to hedge instead of pure individual securities, because it's very difficult to find good shorts.
Very good. Next, I'm going to introduce our current amateur, Jim Van Meerten. Jim's an accountant. He's been investing a long time. So when we say amateur, it doesn't mean neophyte. The 5 months, 5 months of this round of the open, the last 5 months, beat the market, 33% return. And in our open competition, we don't let people just pick one hot stock and hope it goes up. And to run a real portfolio, and it's a very momentum-driven portfolio, use the screens and tools that any of us can use. You don't have to subscribe to expensive services. Jim, what are you seeing in this market, and are you stressing long or short this time?
Actually, I'm straddling the fence. When you look at CNBC and they talk about a market rally, we've been up 2 out of the last 3 days. 3 days does not make a rally or a market. So basically what I do is I look at the market and the 20-day moving average, see how many stocks are trading above the 20-day moving average and how many are below. Recently, it was 60% were trading above the 20-day moving average, 40% below, so that's how I split my portfolio. 60% of my positions were long positions, 40% of them were short positions.
And that's about as clear as the market's been lately. Next, I'm going to introduce Ken Kam. Some of you may know Ken. He speaks at these events a lot. Runs a website called marketocracy.com, where anyone can go run a portfolio. The best investors over term rise up to become part of what he calls his all-star team, his M100. He gleans the picks from their work. He can talk about that better than I. And Ken, what are you seeing in this market? And is your M100, are they thinking long or short right now?
Well, the M100 is always long bias because we think, you know, you should never make investments with a short-term investment horizon. So over time horizons like 2 or 3 years, which I think is the shortest amount by which you should make considered stock investments, the stock market has the bias to the upside. So what we're trying to do right now is figure out which stocks is the market overreacting to the most in the short term. And using that as an opportunity to make great long-term investments that will pay off over the next 2 or 3 years, no matter what the level of interest rates are or who gets elected president or what the level of tax rates are.
I'm going to go next to Andrew Horowitz. We call Andrew, everybody gets a little nickname in our game, Disciplined Investor. That's also the name of his book. He's a money manager. He's a blogger for our Top Stocks blog. You see him all over the place. He calls his strategy Quanta Funda Tecna, which doesn't work on my spell checker, and I'll let him explain what that means. But it's a lot of stock analysis, and I think the neat thing about this portfolio as it develops in this round is he's going to be using a lot of the tools we have on MSN Money, and it'll be a tutorial in how to screen for stocks and those sorts of things. But Andrew, why don't you tell me how you do it?
Yeah, let me take the other side of the discussion here. You know, I think that right now there's been a tremendous amount of a loss of faith in the markets, and rightfully so. Loss of trust. We've seen this before. It's a phenomenon that happens, obviously, when people start losing money. And the process that I'm using in this strategy basically is simple. It's to find stocks that meet a certain criteria. There's a few different criteria and a few different screens that we're using. And then qualifying them again across fundamentals. And then finally making decisions on, you know, when to invest, basically through technicals and charting. But the issue, just to knock heads with my friend here, is that the whole idea of investing 1, 2, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, a lot. You know, to be honest with you, I don't think any of that really matters. The games have changed. The game rules have changed lately, and whether you're investing for a day, a minute, a year, and I believe that we have a sea change happening right now in the markets, very dramatic on a global basis. And the thought of just putting my faith and my money into the hope that things are always going to be like they've always been. It's just, I'm not buying it. Sorry.
Next, I'm going to come back down here, actually. Sorry to see things. I'm going to introduce John Reese. John is the founder of Validia.com. I don't know if you've been to that site, but he's developed computer models of people like Warren Buffett and Peter Lynch, some of the top investors around, which I'm trying to clone those guys since they won't pick stocks for most of us. The other interesting thing about his strategy is that he rebalances. He trades only once a month, which in this market is probably nice to only have to look once a month. But it also removes some of the emotion from it. And John, why don't you tell me, one thing I've noticed from your portfolios is these guys seem to be leading you to a lot of retail this year. And I'm just wondering what you're seeing and what your models are telling you about this market right now.
The models and the gurus on which this lies do not believe, for the most part, in market timing. As David Drummond was actually quoted very recently in Forbes, he can find no examples of market timers who have yachts. So as a result, basically the gurus and we do not believe in forecasting 6 months and certainly not for 2 years. This is kind of reflecting what Cam was saying. That said, there is a bias in the market over the long term toward essentially going up. Right now, the retail sector has some tremendous bargains. The feeling is consumers can't spend because it's a recession. This creates great contrary opportunities for very strong retailing stocks. For instance, Walgreens is one of them right now.
And I think it was up nicely this week. Returns the portfolios we're talking about today are only a week old, so take the returns with a grain of salt. But I think you were, when I left the office on Wednesday anyway, John was our early leader. I think Andrew passed, and I didn't look this morning, honestly, to see who was up. But there's already some pretty decent wins. Last but not least, you probably know Howard Gold. We call him the News Hound. I'm a journalist at heart. So is Howard, and it's new for him to be picking stocks. You probably have heard of core and edge investing, where you have most of your portfolio in very long-term stable investments and maybe 20% in edgier picks to try to boost your return. That's the kind of portfolio Howard is using this round, except that we're ignoring the core. It'll be a lot more fun to look for the edge, and he's trying to follow the news for us and see what's going on. And Howard, tell me what you're... obviously, oil prices are moving the market, and we're going to talk about that, yeah. But what are you seeing as you go through things about the market? Why are we up 300 points today?
Well, let me just very quickly say that for those of you interested in that other 80 to 90%, I'll be giving a workshop tomorrow morning at 10:45 on your ideal retirement portfolio where I discuss only that. This time around, I think we're in an interesting position. I think we're obviously in a bear market now. Sam Stovall of S&P says, generally, once a market hits 20% down, it's generally about another 4 to 6 months before the market bottoms. I don't want to call that. No one can call that. But my best guess is we could see a bottom in this market around the time of the election. Given my sense that it's a bear market, that we really can't trust these big moves, particularly on the upside, and given all the turmoil in the financial sector, I think we have to look for stocks and ETFs that are likely to be good performers in good sectors with solid balance sheet. And I really think sticking with the winners is a best strategy over the next 6 months. And that's what I've tried to do in some of the selections. I do think we may be seeing a sea change. I think emerging markets are over. I think oil and commodities may be over for a long time. So a lot of the hot stocks of the last hot sectors of the last couple of years may not perform, and we have to look for those that are going to continue to hold up given this very difficult environment.
As I promised, we are going to be hearing from John Markman. Now, this is a session that he had on the topics of spin outs and IPOs and reverse splits. And I think there's a really cool discussion there in terms of really, you know, the conventional wisdom thinks that when you look at a stock and you see that it has, for example, a spin out, you think to yourself, well, wait a minute, if the parent company doesn't want that stock, why do I want that stock? But the fact of the matter is, what he showed us was a very interesting study, how in the beginning that may be the case, but he makes the case that it really may be a good long-term investment, and he shows a variety of things. I picked up the beginning of this discussion that he had, and I want you to listen
so
in
anyway,
on that.
So anyway, spin-outs are created when a conglomerate decides that a division is better valued on its own. And very often these units are bought by the previous management team. Really, these companies, and I'm going to tell you about a lot of them right now in a few minutes, these are like orphans that are thrown upon the world with very few of their own assets. They've got unappreciated managers, and the shareholders get an odd lot of these stocks when in their portfolios. For instance, have you ever had a company in your portfolio spin off a stock? Like maybe Genworth, when they spun off Genworth? One day, they'll put out a press release and it'll say, General Electric is spinning off its financial services unit called Genworth. And all of the holders of General Electric suddenly look in their portfolios, and instead of having, let's say, 1,000 shares of General Electric, they have like 980 shares of General Electric and 11.7 shares of some company they never heard of, right? And these companies are very often just sold immediately when they come into people's portfolios because you didn't buy Genworth, you bought General Electric, and you don't know what this thing is. So, and it's an odd lot, and people don't like odd numbers, so they just trash them right away. And very often there's, and I'll show you in my charts, these stocks are pummeled right at the start. They just get hammered, and for like very often for a month or two, they'll just kind of move down and to the right. In a very negative way. But that is there's a lot of opportunity there for people like us who really understand what spin-outs are all about and why they perform well. The heavy selling of these odd lots put so much pressure on spinouts that you really need to be patient. You need to wait about at least 1 to 3 months usually. I'll show you some great examples in a minute. But I got to tell you, academic studies as well as my own experience show that spinouts far outperform the market and their parent over the first 1 to 3 years. And then one of the reasons for that is that management is usually incented to do well quickly. In other words, they leave this mothership. You know, they told their wives, their children, "I'm sorry, I'm leaving General Electric. I'm going to take on this little unit called Genworth. I swear to God I'll make a success out of it." And they're very highly incented monetarily to do well. So neat thing about spin-offs is that from a trading perspective, the trading is dominated by professionals because retail customers, they never get sold these stocks. You know, your broker doesn't call you up and say, "Hey, there's this great spin-out I got to tell you about, blah, blah, blah." These things are usually handled by professionals. And the reason I mention that is that they trade just like you would expect, with bases, breakouts, pullbacks to uptrends, consolidations, etc. So we have to really, it gives us an opportunity to both be a value, contrarian value investor, and then switch over to being a trader.
All right, we're going to go right into my discussion with Yad Yedzinski. And a good guy. I spent a lot of time with him over the course of a few days in San Francisco. We had some dinner together and spent some time talking about his strategy. Really smart guy. And I think that you'll enjoy what he has to say. He has a website called The Skeptical Capitalist. He is also on the MSN Money Strategy Lab. I'll put some links in the website under the show notes for this show for you. And I think that one of the things I got kind of a real charged discussion about commodities. We talked about oil. We talked about the banks. We talked about where things are right now and where we're going. And I wanted to kind of catch up with him and ask him those questions. So take a listen here at this discussion I had with him with Yad Yedzinski of the SkepticalCapitalist.com. We are here with the winner of the Strategy Lab from last year, Yad Yedzinski. He is he's hoping to win this year. We'll see. I'm hopefully going to be some stiff competition. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I'm glad to. Always glad to be at your show.
So you and I, we spent a lot of time talking about all sorts of things, bantering back the financials and beating them up like the market has beaten them up and talking about things. How about the world of commodities? It seems that aside from oil, like corn and all the different food commodities, the discussion about how we have Asia and India just consuming massive amounts of all of this, is that going to continue?
No. I personally think it's over. What's more, actually, there's a little interesting niche fact. Last week, I had the opportunity to speak with the largest peanut farmer in the world. And you know what they said? And they said that this year's crop of peanuts and corn is going to be the best they've ever seen because the equipment orders for all the stuff from all the farmers have been just going through the roof.
Really?
They think that this year's crop is going to be phenomenal. That can't be good news for any of the food-related commodities. And as far as all the rest of them, the copper, every bull market has a copper roof. That's the old saying. I mean, we've seen the bull market. It's way over. Copper is over.
So everybody, you have this huge run, and everybody kind of went into all these things and just really pushed them up to incredible levels and, wondering what's going to happen. We had the ethanol discussion that, there's going to be no more corn available, and corn went up, dramatically, raising the price for all sorts of feed. The baseline for a lot of the feed is corn. And what do people do now? I mean, how do you make money on this? Or how do you at least, what do you do to move aside? You have some of the companies like Potash, Trepid Potash. You have Mosaic. Are these things, are you shorting these now?
Absolutely. And I don't necessarily will short the specific company, but what I would do, I would buy ultra-short ETF like SMN. That shorts all their materials and material-related companies. You can actually short Intrepid Potash or Mosaic or... I mean, there are a host of the companies that still make a great short at this price.
Right.
And people being very misled by low PEs and high growth. But I mean, that's been built in the prices of the past.
Right.
And what goes up kind of come down.
It seems that way. So we've also talked about and bantered around where are we going in the future? Like, how is it that the market is at this level? Is it going to level off from here, move up? We've seen a couple 300-day bounces. And moving forward with all the things that's gone on, particularly in the financials, is this kind of a point where we're going to see consolidation and then move up? Or is this kind of the point where we're going to all of a sudden just jump off a cliff and just go straight down?
You know, I've had my, I have, I have, At this point, I have not decided for myself which way we're going to go. I think the easiest projection, the passive list resistance is down, actually, mm-hmm. regardless of all the rallies. And I think the fact that it is a bear market is confirmed by the 400-point swings on the Dow. You know, as you know, 9 of the 10 largest, you know, 400 or 500-point swings on the Dow have happened during the bear market.
Right.
You don't have days like this during the bull market. I think in the short term, the direction is up. But in the long run, I think it is very possible we can retest the lows.
Yeah. So you will say angered a few people, caused a stir with you on your article about $4
gas.
Per gallon gas.
Yeah.
And we talked about that and kind of
That's right.
It's interesting. So what do you think? I mean, you know, where do we go from here? And what I'm sure you're not apologizing for, because I don't think there's any need to. And, you know, those people that were mad at you, it's just the way it is. I mean, are we going to have, do we really need to have $4 a gas? I mean, what's your thesis on this whole thing?
My thesis is very simple. First of all, the American people don't like taxes. That's the first thing that came out of the whole debate.
There's a country that people do like taxes?
No, I don't believe so. I think that's a good point. I just think that I believe that this, in order for U.S. to defeat the energy dependency, has to be a fundamental shift in consumer behavior. I think what happened in the last year confirmed, everybody was telling us gasoline is inelastic, okay? The price is going to go up, people are going to keep driving. And what happened when gasoline approached about $4 a barrel, the behavior changed. People, I mean, if you look around, you could see gasoline consumption year over year is down. Cars overtook sales of SUVs. And what I'm afraid of, I think the shift in demand is great. I think that's the only way you can defeat their long-term dependency. However, if prices drop too fast, people, I mean, we are all humans. We forget. So a year from now, all of a sudden, the gasoline goes back to $2.50 and, you know, everybody starts buying, you know, hammers again, and we're going to be in the same in the same pickle a year from now.
Well, it's the moral hazard that we're seeing across everything, right? You know, the fact is the banks get bailed out. That's the other thing you and I have been talking about, and I don't get this. I really don't understand this point where people say, you know, GM is such a problem, and, you know, where's it going? Well, don't worry, GM can't go down. They'll be bailed out. Same thing with Ford. Same thing with Citigroup. Same thing. I don't get how they're going to just bail out everybody.
You see, that's the problem. You can't bail out everybody. I think a lot of people have, you know, live by the motto, hope is the strategy, and hope is not the strategy.
Right.
And the problem is that I think Federal Reserve reduced rates way too low again. I mean, you should have learned once. They're doing it again. The Fed funds are way below the official inflation. You talk about real inflation, it's even worse, and everybody talks about deflation and asset prices. Yeah, I'm not sure how many people, I mean, if you go out there, you can see that everybody's still raising prices. So inflation is still the problem. Money supply is still rising. It's slowing down a little bit, and I think, I think the moral hazard is real. I think it's a real problem. People got to wake up and realize you got to bite the bullet.
Well, in fact, we're all the same, as you say. We're all, you know, human and all people. We don't do anything until there's enough pain to make us do something.
Right.
So on one hand, I think you're right. You know, we have to have some pain because we can't be driving around in these SUVs, and we're all guilty of it, you know, that are consuming extraordinary amounts of gasoline, and then cry on the other hand that we have to pay too much. In fact, you could even view the fact that the price went so high as almost a consumption tax.
Correct.
I mean, essentially, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
If you choose to eat, you know, drink a $400 bottle of wine, you pay the $400 bottle of wine tab, you know?
That's right.
So let me ask you one more thing, and we'll close down. So what is, what is the one thing that you're worried about right now? You know, you have a portfolio of longs, you have a portfolio of shorts. You know, you talked to me about you have a pretty full portfolio right now, pretty well allocated,
mm-hmm.
you know, where I'm at 30% to 40% right now. So what's worrying you right now? What things do you think that you really need to adjust and people should be aware of moving forward?
I think one thing that worries me that we're starting to see the examples of the same behavior we've seen, you know, every time the market tops out a little bit. People start to get complacent again. People believe that, you know, the danger is over. Nothing, you know, all the bad news is out. And I think anytime I see people get so, they pretty much there is no fear. Fear has left the market, and I'm a little bit afraid of that. Every
fear
time it happens,
has left the house, huh?
That's right. And I'm afraid every time that happens, we get some nasty views out there.
Well, I don't think it's done. So hey, thanks for joining me, Disciplined Investor Podcast. Yazvinsky, I'll get it right one of these days. Did I get it right?
That's right.
Okay, you can mess up my name.
Just call me Skeptic.
Okay. I'll just call you Winner. How's that?
That's good.
That's even better, right?
All champ.
Right. Yeah, champ. Check out, everybody make sure to check out his portfolio at the Strategy Lab on MSN Money. And here's to you, and best of luck.
Well, that's about it from San Francisco. This is Andrew Horowitz on the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 69. Thanks for joining me today. We'll go back to our regularly scheduled program next week. And if you have any questions, of course, you can email me. Oh, you know what I have? I want to mention to you, I have been writing a piece. I have been trying to come up with an earth-shattering, incredible benefit to humankind, and that is how to fix the automobile industry. And of course, that's not a new idea, but I'm sure this, you know, you've thought of it too. How the heck do we get the domestic automobile manufacturers getting back on their feet to make sure that they are not only solid so they can stay in business to sell cars, but also to make sure that they can take care of their entire cadre of retirees, because that's a big issue right now. I mean, the benefits and pension plans are in just a real, real concerning shape. So what I did is I've been thinking about this for some time, and I thought, what could really be the way to fix this? Now, mind you, I wrote a piece on this about the American Axle, the strike back a few months ago, and talked about unions, and boy, did I get some hate mail. but I still think that there is a way to fix this. It may not be the perfect solution for everybody involved, but I promise to bring you that on the next podcast and talk about how to fix the automobile industry, at least in my view, and what to do for that. And I asked a lot of you to write in, and I have all sorts of people that wrote me, and we'll incorporate that into the discussion. And thank you so much. If you do want to write, we have just a few more days left. Send it off to info@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. How to fix the automobile, the domestic automobile industry. If you have an idea, we'd love to incorporate it in and see if it works. This is a team effort. This is a conversation, and I do appreciate you listening in, and I'd love to hear from you. So anyway, that's about all we have for you today. If you want to check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, there's a virtual tour there on the website. Just go to the website. It's all over the place there. You can check it out. A lot of people really enjoying the fact that we have this conversation. Also offline, when it comes to that portfolio, all the people that have invested are getting regular updates on why it is we're investing, what we're doing, etc. And I will tell you, in this market, we are up, and we have a number of positions that are doing quite well right now. So if you want to check that out, do so. Otherwise, I will see you next week. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for listening. See you soon on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.